This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
We are feeling five alive, gents, and super sixy. Sheffield Wednesday seen off with relative ease at Griffin Park as five strikes, not one, by the way, scored by Ollie Watkins nor Saeed Benrahma.
Rubbish.
Made
trail.
It a first. I know. Tell me about it. I thought that after the weekend.
Off.
Terrible. It was the first win in six for the Bees without either of those scoring. Next up, it is a zippy trip across town to a land where defeat was last tasted all the way back in April 1990. We're going to be getting into all of the above. We're going to be hearing from head coach Thomas Frank, fans from both sides after that annihilation of the Owls. We're going to be continuing our rundown of the best and worst in Brentford history. We'll be wishing a Mr. Marcondes a happy birthday today. Good weekend for him to celebrate, of course. And we're also going to give a nod to the London Football Awards, where the Bees boasted double bubble. Lovely, lovely stuff. It is the Brentford Fan Show on Love Sport, the station giving fans a voice. We've got your team covered with Churchill Business Insurance. It's me, Matt Beadle, here with the boys from Besotted. Dave Laney Lane. Hello, Dave.
Evening. How are you, mate?
Very good, thank you. And Gary GP Paul. Hello.
Good to see you.
It's been a while.
Indeed.
I'm glad I got those right. I don't know whether you heard last week, but I was slightly told off by Billy the Bee Grant for calling him XG Dave Anderson. No, Dave XG Anderson.
Right,
and of course
okay,
it
yeah.
is XG Dave.
The other way around.
Oof, tell you what, I've learned my lesson.
Yeah.
I have learned my lesson.
Ray just got his cards printed.
So. Yeah. gents, plenty coming up, but you've been down the White Hart.
Yeah, down the White Hart. They looked after us very, very well again. We have a regular slot called the White Hart Whisper, where it's our pre-production meeting. You know, we go down there and we sort of like scope out the show. But there's always something to sort of like whisper about. It's either something that's kind of like not quite news, it's a rumour. And today, the White Hart Whisper really is centred around Pontus Janssen. You know, we've spoken about him week in, week out, you know, for the last couple of months. How close is he to being fit? What is his actual injury? Will we ever see him again? Has it been a bust up? Has his head fallen off? You know, whatever it is. And then today, right there on Brentford's official Twitter, there's Pontus Janssen right at the centre of the photograph, and he's training, and the caption on Instagram is the players getting ready for Friday. So the link's there. When we're trying to work out whether is it kind of mind games ahead of Fulham on Friday.
I think someone's been a bit handy with the Photoshop.
No, I think he's actually there, but the actual reference to him playing on Friday, you know. So are they teasing the players? They're teasing the Brentford fans, or are they kind of teasing the coaches and the people at Fulham, trying to work out, you know, will he sort of centre or not?
I saw this photo earlier on, and when I first looked at it, I thought, because it doesn't look like a proper professional photo. I don't know, there was something about it. I thought, it's all a bit ambiguous, but maybe that's all part and parcel of what they're trying to do, like you say.
Oh, was it fake news? Are we saying it's deep fake?
No. Not fake at all, but not. I felt like there wasn't proper clarity in the photo, but I do think that that's all part of the masquerade, maybe.
Quite possibly.
So we shall see.
Exciting.
All shall pan out in the next few days, I'm sure.
Not played, what, since January the 11th?
Not played since we did Queen's Park Rangers.
Yeah, the Queen's Park Rangers game was his last one.
So I think he'll be chomping to come back for the Fulham match. So, you know, Fulham won't be very much looking forward to our visit, I don't think, after the preparation that they had at the weekend and the preparation that we had.
So, fellas, talk to me about the game, because an absolute rout of Sheffield Wednesday. We know that they are in terrible form. That is now two wins for them in 14. They're in free fall. They're fortunate that, you know, they had the start to the season that they did. I think they were third at Christmas Day, but obviously not going very well under Gary Monk. But an absolute annihilation, as we said at the top.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I said to Dave in the White Hart, it reminded me, to use an analogy, it was like Jaws. Sheffield Wednesday fell in the water and Brentford smelt blood. And they absolutely went for it. I was very impressed at how we started that game. There's been a lot of games where we've had an inauspicious start or we started a little bit slowly, but we got Sheffield Wednesday straight away and they just couldn't cope with it.
Yeah, as soon as the first goal went in, as soon as Josh De Silva sort of, I called it a tap in. It was a bit more than a tap in. He had to find the space. But as soon as that goal came in, you could sense the relief around the ground. I think, you know, we're very much used to seeing Brentford dominate, create loads of chances, and it's not always the case we get the goal early. Mm. Sometimes we've got to just, you know, keep knocking on the door. But Saturday, the goal came early, and then obviously we had that wonder strike by Marcondes for the second. You, Gary, you must have had a tremendous view of that.
Yes, I was dying. Directly behind. I mean, I think me and you were saying in the pub, we couldn't believe that a penalty wasn't given. Because who was it, the centre-back who scissored?
Yeah, it wasn't the best bit of defending that guy's ever.
No, he just kind of scissored him. It's just one of those things where I was saying, hold on, did nobody see that? Because no Brentford player really reacted to it. And
no, it was on Watkins, wasn't it?
There was like a kind of scissor tackle on Watkins. I think he got the ball, but he got a lot of man as well.
But that shot, I mean, it did everything a ball could possibly do.
Beautiful. And it was first league goal for the club, isn't it? It's his second goal. And when you think of the two goals that he scored, not too dissimilar in terms of technique.
Yeah, I think one was the first one was a dead ball, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
But, yeah, again, that one moved around. This one really did. As I said to Dave, it reminded me of an episode of Viz I read years ago when Billy the Fish was inside the ball driving it. It just went out, it went back in, and it went down. And you know, you're just amazed at a lot of time you say, is it the player or is it the ball? And I've kicked one of those balls and it's clearly the player.
I would love you to put that to Emiliano Marcondes and just see what he says. Yeah. That was like an episode of Viz, Emiliano. Just like Billy the Fish.
Oh, I'm sure he'll be. I've never heard of it. I wouldn't have thought so. He wasn't even born.
Probably before he was born.
Wasn't even born. But yeah, no, I thought Marcondes' first half performance was excellent as well. You know, he did tail off a little bit in the second half, but you know, I think that's being particularly picky. I think he set up the third goal as well. The beautiful, beautiful through ball to Mbeumo.
Sublime. That was the type of ball that we were crowing that Romain Sawyers was doing last year. It was just perfect. It split the defence, and the weight on it was perfect for Mbeumo to run through and score.
And it was obviously a relief. You know, we'd thrown away a two-goal lead the week before, and then we'd obviously lost at Luton. I don't think it was inevitable that someone was going to get a spanking, but it was a real relief. Someone was going to get what they deserved from our performances. I think Luton was the exception. The performance was way lower than we'd become expected to. But, you know, Sheffield Wednesday, they put up a little bit of a fight, I have to admit. Yeah, they did at 2-0. They did have a few chances. The third goal, you could argue, slightly came against the
Yeah, because I think Fletcher had a header, didn't he? And, you know, he got a bit of separation from the defender. And I was a bit concerned about that because, as I said, when you've conceded a week after, you know, you've gone 2-0 up again, and then you see somebody like him, and he was the one that undid us at their place. We see somebody like him that gets a chance like that close to, you start to panic a little bit.
Look, I'm not going to say that they were quality, but they did have a few chances at 2-0. So, on another day, they might have got a goal back, and it may have been slightly closer. But the third goal absolutely knocked them out. And then second half, it was really as many goals as
to be honest,
to
I think it was weird because they did have kind of, there was like a period in the middle of the game where it became, you know, you started to worry a bit. I mean, once we got the third, we weren't too bothered. But Wednesday didn't start the second half too badly, I don't think.
No, and it's also that case of, like, do we actually let teams have the possession? Because as soon as they get into our half, we can just absolutely annihilate on the break.
Well, I've looked at a couple of the passages of play. I mean, I was watching the highlights, and then I've looked over some of the action again today. The third goal, like you said, Mbeumo's goal, wonderful, built from the back. And the fourth goal, De Silva's goal, and I saw the tweet that the club put out, 17 passes involving 10 different players. Such a fantastic move, and very casual at the beginning, just casually passing it around, and then boom, cut and thrust for the goal.
Boom being the operative word, yeah.
There was a stat that I read that I think only four Wednesday players completed more passes than David Raya.
That's correct, yeah. It's just ridiculous, isn't it? 20 passes he made, 20 accurate passes. There was also a rumour, I don't know how true this is, you might be able to substantiate this one, guys, that a lot of the Sheffield Wednesday fans were already in the boozers before the second half had even kicked off.
I think some left.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a huge fire drill. I mean, and a lot of them went round to the forecourt waiting for Monk and the players to emerge.
Really?
We hear about that in the fan package. We've got a few Sheffield Wednesday fans talking about the demise of their club since Christmas, and the fact that, you know, they're looking down the barrel of relegation. If they get a points deduction, which is expected to come their way in the next couple of weeks, you know, depending on the severity of that deduction, they could be in the bottom three. And on that form, you really wouldn't expect them to escape.
Absolutely. I know that he's not someone who can cast his eye over Brentford. I'm sure you don't hold his opinion that highly, but I was watching the Quest highlights as well on Saturday evening. Neil Warnock was, of course, the pundit, and he said that he's never seen movement like it when he was referring to BMW. And I know that Saturday wasn't all about BMW. Yes, and Mbeumo got on the score sheet, and yes, Watkins and Bumrama played well. But he said he's never seen movement like it. When they're in gear, they are the best in the league, without a shadow of a doubt.
I'd probably take his opinion a lot more seriously now he's not in. He hasn't got a job. He can actually say what he genuinely thinks, rather than sort of masking it around whatever his team needs to get out of it. So, you know, love him or hate him, he's been around the block. He knows his football, Neil Warnock. And
indeed,
yeah, you can't argue with that. I mean, as Gary said, it was like a shark that smelt blood. And we literally go for the jugular. And it could have been 7, 8, 9 if we'd have really taken our chances.
64 goals now, so equaling West Brom, of course, for the most goals in the Championship. You mentioned the fans in the pub, Dave. We're going to go to them now. And here is what they had to say after the game.
We've got our mojo back. That was a magnificent performance today by the Bees. I'm not certain how good Wednesday are. In fact, I think they're pretty terrible. But all-round contributions were excellent today. Delighted to see Marcondes really put in a good shift in the first half. Tailed off a bit in the second. But, you know, you couldn't fault any of our players. De Silva getting two goals, he's back onto it. Really, for an all-round team performance, you couldn't wish for more. And we've got Fulham on Friday. We go into that with a real confident streak. Let's keep this run going, see where we end up.
Superb goal from him today, and he set up our third goal as well on the break. So I think the people who don't rate Marcondes might need to have a rethink of that one. But the Bees today were resilient. They kept plugging away. We could have had more goals. Wednesday had their odd moment, but that is a big fillip ahead of Fulham on Friday.
I think Josh De Silva, who has probably slipped a little bit of recent weeks, was absolutely superb today. Not only did he get two goals, but he was magnificent. He's really got back to driving runs, getting the ball and driving upfield, and he was superb today.
Absolutely delighted. One of the best games I've seen in a while. I haven't seen us play that well. I thought Jean-Vier was looking really strong today. Watkins looking really strong. Great result.
We just seized the game by the scruff of the neck in the first 15, 20 minutes, and we didn't let go afterwards. They just, you know, we just knocked it out of them. So I think weak game had an effect on them. I don't know. But I think we can't take anything away from our performance. We're just really, really good on the day.
If Gary Monk gets sacked, the same players will have got rid of the last four Sheffield Wednesday managers. It's 100% down to the players.
You can't keep going down 3-0 at half time. How many times? It must be 4-5 times since Christmas. And we just told us, cousin, can't do it.
The game was gone at half time. It's gone after 20 minutes. We just don't perform. We don't create anything. We sit back. I'm lost for words because it's getting worse and worse and worse. There's guys outside the players' entrance now having to go at the managers, having to go at the players, they're having to go at the chairman. The club is in turmoil.
Great performance, Joe. We've got a bit of form for this. For if this is our little blip, and then we've had it out of kick in. We did it a little while ago before the Luton game, and results sort of went our way today. So I think we're definitely going to set ourselves up for a charge at the fourth place, third place maybe. Get that final game at Griffin Park meaning something. Yeah, so I'm really happy. Really good to see Marcondes. you know, sort of put in a shift. I had a fiver of Josh De Silva hat-trick, which is heartbreaking. Well done. Good job all round. Bearing in mind, you know, whatever, we nearly, most of these lads have played 40 games now this season. But, you know, we're still missing, we were counting five injuries to the first team squad, and we're still looking good. So very, very happy. You know, roll on Friday.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It's the Brentford Fan Show with me, Matt Beale, and the boys from Besotted, Dave, Laney Lane and Gary GP Paul. Just a quick reminder that from the 31st of March, Love Sport's national station will be the only way of listening to Love Sport on DAB radio across the UK. If you are listening to us on Love Sport London, you need to retune your radio. It's an easy process. Just press the auto-tune refresh or auto-scan button on your digital radio or go into the menu and press auto-tune to make sure you do not miss your favourite shows right here on Love Sport. And of course, this is one, the Brentford Fan Show. And gents, we're going to move on now quickly before we hear from head coach Thomas Frank after the game on Saturday. There was a certain awards ceremony in the capital.
Yep. Thursday night was the London Football Awards. I don't know the history of these awards, if I'm honest with you. I think 3 years ago they didn't exist. So, obviously it's prestigious. They all wore nice dicky bows and nice suits and whatever. So, you know, we got a couple of bits of silverware, which hopefully isn't the last we get this season.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. But yeah, tip our hats to Ollie Watkins, who was nominated, and he got the award for the EFL London Player of the Year, and then Thomas Frank got Manager of the Year for London. So, you know, they're not to be sniffed at. They're up against some very, very stiff competition, and for our players and for our management to be singled out as you know, it's exceptional in the capital. Then, you know, obviously it's something that, you know, it's only a hugely positive thing. And it's just nice to get to see Thomas Frank being recognised and rewarded, because, you know, he's understated. He's certainly not got an ego about him. And, you know, hopefully the future he's got in the game is going to be with us.
Yeah, and, you know, as you said, fingers crossed, it's not the only thing that we achieved this year. But yeah, I mean, I think as much as you can say, you don't know, you know, the awards haven't been around for that long. But to be recognised is great, especially when you consider the others, when you consider where we've come from, and the other teams that we do compete. Because, you know, there are a couple of other teams in London that are around.
One or two.
So to finish above them is always nice.
Yeah, no, I think it's part of this process of raising the profile of a club. If people hear our name and the winning of awards, and they hear the names of our players constantly, whether it's, you know, the BMW, or whether it's Ollie Watkins getting another goal, whether it's another trick from Benrahma, whether it's, you know, whatever it is, it's there's a lot of hype surrounding our club, and it helps in raising the stature and raising the reputation. For so many years now, we've been in the shadow of all of these clubs around us that have enjoyed that, having players that are constantly talked about, having players that are constantly linked with not just transfers, but the transfers to the biggest clubs in the land and overseas, and huge transfer fees. You know, we get frustrated that there's a constant conveyor belt of players that are being lined up to leave, and sooner or later we hope we can keep hold of a few of them. If we're going to make it to the Premier League, we're going to need to retain some of our best talent, and the three that we've got up top at the moment, you really would want to keep hold of. But their combined value must be in the region of £75 million. And it's almost like, my God, what could we do with that money? If we've assembled those three players for less than 10, and we're going to get maybe 75, 80 million pounds, it takes us to a different level. So,
no, definitely.
You know, it's seeing your players being singled out as excellent and being at the very top of what they're doing, it's nothing other than brilliant.
Is that tough though, right? Because that is potentially going to be a conundrum, isn't it? Say you were to get 70 million for those three players that you've mentioned there, that's great. But if you then go up into the Premier League, if those players do go to different clubs, you've then got to, and listen, the scouting situation at the club is absolutely brilliant. We know that the recruitment is top notch, but you've then got to replace them. So do you go, is £70 million enough to potentially splash that on players that we don't know about, that might not produce the statistics alone that those guys have produced?
Some players are going to be easier to replace than others. I don't think, you know, players like Sai Benrahma come along once in a lifetime. You know, for someone as exciting as him, as raw as him, and with a future like he's going to enjoy, he'll probably be the hardest to replace. Ollie Watkins, of course, is a great talent, but if you create as many chances for strikers as we do, then you know you probably get a good return. They're going to be different players. They're not going to be like exact for exact. You know, we will miss Ollie Watkins. He's a lovely kid. You know, you're not going to get exactly like him. He's a very different player to Neil Morpay. But you know, any Brentford fan that's been on the journey of the last 5 or 6 years will realise that, you know, we should feel excited that the DOFs and the scouts and all these people that are out there looking at players, they've probably got, you know, they've probably got players lined up already. They will have players lined up already. Who they are, God only knows.
That's the thing, I would assume. So, I mean, again, if you had said to us this time last year, we're losing Morpay, what would our reaction have been?
Yeah, it would have been tears.
Yeah, exactly. Now it's, you know, again, the same thing with Hotter. Like, you know, now people have seen Benrahma, nobody mentions Hotter anymore.
No, so yeah, the page will turn, and you know, it's almost inevitable. At least one of them will go, if not two. You know,
yeah.
And we saw, you know, talking about the, you know, the London Football Awards, there was a tweet which someone was interviewing Watkins, and he was talking about his, you know, potential dream move to Arsenal. So, you know, I don't want to comment on that out of complete context, because I've got no idea what the original question was, but you know, he's being talked of in you know, with being linked to those kind of clubs, so we'll see what happens in the summer.
It can only be a good thing. No doubt Thomas Frank will be asked that question many times over the course of the next few months. He was asked many questions after the game on Saturday, and here is how he answered.
The big headline today was desire to defend, because we know that we are a very good side going forward. We know we are a top footballing team, so when we are absolutely on it, we are a big threat for every team in this division. But the thing we wanted to change the most this season was defending, and we've been very, very pleased with that throughout the season overall. Then we came into February and we started to concede more soft goals for various reasons, and I think we were a step up against Cardiff in many ways, but today was bang on. You can see after the first 25 minutes where we were absolutely top in our game, we maybe dropped off a bit. They're not a bad side, Sheffield Wednesday. Not everything was right, but we put blocks in and we fight it, and you know, and then we got back into the game, and then the rest is history. We were winning 5-0. Even in the end, we won that clean sheet with Rico and Ethan putting some fantastic blocks in. And then on top of that, the confidence and the freshness in the team, you could see that today. It's important that you know, our BMW is getting all the headlines, and it's just nice to see that, yes, Brian still scored a fantastic goal. Yes, Said had 2 assists, and Oli just working so hard and keeping, you know, staying in the game. Of course, you want to score as a striker, but just working for that bigger purpose, winning the football match, is fantastic. And then coming back to your question, Emiliano Macontis. Wow, what a player. So pleased for him. When the ball went into the back of the net, I just was just so happy, because he's been through so much struggling in this football club because of a lot of injuries, and then it's difficult to find his form and all that. But now I think 2 good performances from him, coming in a very important moment in the season. And then, of course, Justa Silva, who is a very good player, and I think he was on top of his game in November, December, and then he dropped off a bit in terms of maybe didn't have that extra power or freshness, but he definitely had that today. Honestly, it's the defending that will maybe make us achieve our goals this year, because that's the big difference between or no success. So I'm very pleased with that.
Thomas Frank there in fine fettle, as he always has seemed to be this season, Dave.
Yeah, that's the way you want to hear him. You want to hear him positive and talking about the you know, how well his team's performed, and you know, targeting individuals about, you know, how they've contributed and how they're developing as players. So yeah, more of the same. Hopefully he's speaking quite as happily as that after the game on Friday. If he does that, it's going to be a big, big night in West London, I can tell you that. Just before we move on, we ought to talk about the B team quickly as well. They finished their Cypriot training camp with a 3-0 win over Russian third-tier team FC Rodina Moscow. I've never heard of them before. And tomorrow night, they're back in the UK. And it was due to be a game at Griffin Park under the lights against Glasgow Rangers. But they want to keep the pitch fresh. And they're expecting rain, so they don't want it to cut up. So they've moved it to the Metropolitan Police's ground, the Imber Court in Molesey. So it's just across the bridge at Hampton Court. It's a mile or so away from that. £5 to get in with a 7:30 kickoff. So I'd imagine a few bees will go down there for that one.
Lovely stuff. That is definitely one to look out for. It's the Brentford Fan Show on Love Sport.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
It's the Brentford Fan Show here on Love Sport London. Me, Matt Beadle, with Dave Laney Lane and Gary GP Paul, the boys from Besotted. This is the station giving fans a voice, of course. We've got your team covered with Churchill Business Insurance, where you can take the stress out of managing your van insurance with Churchill. Our comprehensive policies offer you peace of mind. 24-hour accident recovery, £500 cover for loss or damaged audio equipment, plus guaranteed repairs for 5 years. Visit the van page at churchill.com. Churchill is underwritten by UK Insurance Limited, and Churchill Van is arranged and administered by Brightside Insurance Services Limited.
This is Love Sport.
So, gents, we are going to move on now to a series we started last week and one I'm thoroughly enjoying. Last week it was, of course, the Griffin Park travesties. This is the best and worst of Brentford history as we approach the end of the season. The end of Griffin Park, of course. It's got the fans talking, recalling the long list of adversity suffered down the years last week. This week, we're going to be looking at some kits. I'm delighted to say that Nick Bruzon joins us now. Hello, Nick.
Good evening, chaps. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. I'm reliably informed, Nick, that you are something of a kit collector.
I probably more towards kit nerd, but yeah, I do have one or two in the collection, much to Mrs. B's disgust.
Yeah. How many have you got in the old collection?
Oh, probably looking, 50 to 100 accumulated over the last couple of years. Just that.
Hello, Nick, Dave. Thanks for coming on tonight. But you've got some beauts. I know you've got some beauts, and we'll talk about your collection, I think, in a little bit. But this series that we put together, this kind of like a bit of fun as we sort of approach what is going to be an emotional finish to Griffin Park. But we put it out today, just for asking people to suggest what their favourite kits have been, and obviously most people is going to be since the 70s. We didn't really have replica shirts before the late 70s, did we?
Yeah. No. I mean, it's been very much a relatively modern phenomenon. You think how long the club has been around for, and it's been a lot of red and white stripes and not much else variety, to be quite honest. The obvious exception being the 1960-61 gold and blue season, but until the late 70s and that central badge in 76-77, it's been red and white stripes of the same width, three reds, four whites, and not much difference. And all of a sudden, boom, the marketing men, the kit champs got hold of things, and we haven't looked back since.
And I think the undoubted winner, I'm not going to go by statistics. I'm going to choose my favourite, actually, as the undoubted winner. It's the 1980-81 Adidas kit, which is, it's kind of like rarer than rocking horse manure. It's something that even you haven't got, isn't that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I've got the, let's try to call it the modern reproduction. But no, I haven't got that, and it's an absolute thing of beauty. It really is. It's so simple, but it's so classic. It's an iconic shirt for Brentford fans, amongst kit collectors, full stop. It's not actually my all-time favourite, but it's most definitely up there in the top two, top three no question. It really is stunning, and it's an absolutely glaring omission from my collection, that's for sure. I'd love to get my hands on one, but it is magnificent, no question.
And go on, you mentioned your favourite. What would your favourite be?
I was thinking about this on the way home tonight. For me, my all-time favourite is still the 1990-92 Chad promotion kit, sponsored by KLM, red, white, black collar, black cuffs, a classic Castle badge. It really is simple but stylish. And, of course, it's a shirt we got promoted to what is now the Championship in for that one brief season after all those years and years of trying. I mean, it looks stunning, and for me, it's just got all those memories, you know, that final six-game run in, the destruction of Fulham, the win up at Peterborough, Birmingham City shooting himself in the foot. It's just everything came together at once. Ingwer just banging the goals in, Bliss, Smiley, Sinton, Terry Evans. It's for me, it's one of my all-time favourite teams, my all-time favourite shirts. The other one I like, and may well be rounded off the shot for this, probably one of our most controversial, is the Oscar 83-84, the half and half, which is white stripes on the bottom, and the all white upper half. It's just so bizarre. It's so god awful.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting one. And I'd say it kind of moved away from that red and white stripes, and now they've tended to put the white bit on the back. So, would you say that's a shirt you don't like, or is there another one that really doesn't tickle your fancy?
Actually, just quickly before he comes back in, I just want to check with you guys, because I remember this particular kit that he's referred to there, Chad.
Chad.
What was Chad?
Well, we had some awful manufacturers. We had Chad, we had Oscar, Hobot, TFG.
I had the TFG shirt, probably the last, the best.
Oh, really?
I've got a couple in the shed, and you can still wear them. Whereas, a couple of Lonsdale ones have got, a bit tatty. Those ones lasted.
And some of the other particular favourites that have come in on social media, there was a St George's Cross shirt that Brentford played in. I've got the manufacturer of that one.
Was that Lonsdale?
I think that might be Lonsdale, yeah. And it was actually, we were sponsored by St George's, which is a construction company, and it had St George's written across the middle of it. And they used the stripes to be it looked like St George's Cross, so that was particularly clever, I'd say. The return of Adidas when we got promoted to the Championship was eagerly anticipated. A lot of people say in the 2015-16 kit, that version was probably the best one. Nick mentioned the Chad 91-92 we got promoted in, black V-neck, where Dean Holdsworth and Gary Blissett were kind of knocking in the goals for fun. And then the Hummel Chevron kit that came the season afterwards, 92-93. So we've had some good ones. We've had some absolute crock of rubbish as well. none more so than I'd say the 1989 Centenary kit, which was, the stripes were so thin it looked like they were pink. It looked like it was a pink shirt.
Like that horrible Sunderland kit they released a couple of seasons ago.
And it was, I think Sheffield United had one exactly the same at the time. And we had a centenary badge on that, which was just the most ridiculous B that looked like some kid had come up with at school. So,
no, let's not go to all Bs.
Nick has got 50 different Brentford shirts in his collection. The smell of nylon and it must be kind of, is that overwhelming in your house at times?
Oh, Dave, just the static alone from some of those, they're horrific. But I won't have a bad word said against the Hobart Funky Bee from '89. It was it was so awful. And It was kind of good. Yeah, the pink was a bit glaring. I'll give you that. But you compare that to the shonky sponsor of the Puma Sambo kit from 2007, which
of course, yeah,
if
God,
any of those that have survived the first wash would be a miracle. Yeah.
I've got signed one of those, which is kind of like a constant reminder of us going down, only getting 33 points.
Yeah, I mean, the ultimate humiliation on and off the field. I mean, that thing was just diabolical. The Puma teabag back from 2012-13, it looked fantastic from the back. Won't retide any female fans, brass straps on the show and pinprick sunburn.
And the other shirt that has actually got quite a lot of love, and it's probably the one that we probably wouldn't have thought about. We actually have played in it at home, so we can talk about it. It's this year's commemorative third kit. The although it's historically nonsense, and we never played in those colours, they must have, whoever it was designed that was obviously looking at a black and white picture, and didn't realise that there should be some sort of yellow in there. But it looks great on athletes. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely stunning. And, you know, ironically enough, I think when Toss did their first ever Brentford repro, they made the same mistake. Just assumed, looked at the colourised photo, messed it up. But, you know, our version, as you say, it's an absolute historical nonsense. But it just looks great. Two-tone blue, thin stripes, sponsor-free for all of us that get it from the club shop. it really is a stunning piece of kit.
What's your expectations for next year, Nick? I mean, you know, it's new stadium. It's got to be something really special. Judging on the pricing strategy that's going on, it's probably going to be upwards of £250 as well.
Yeah, there are some things where you just got to grit your teeth and dive in. And look, if it's rubbish, I won't buy it. And
yes, you will.
Definitely buy it. Surely, that's what you do, Nick.
Maybe not on the first day. But look, I mean, I'll say one thing. Kitman Bob has got it generally spot on over the last few seasons. Even the brown and orange on the away kit. I know we're not really talking away shirts, but the brown and orange is different. But look, I've got high hopes. We all know whatever it is already been long picked. This season's home shirt is the best in a long while. The blue shirt's great. The away kit's good. I honestly, this will surprise you, I guess. I don't even know who the technical sponsor is next season, whether we're still with Umbro or whether we're looking elsewhere.
Nick, I've got to ask you this question. Which, out of all your shirts, which one will you get buried in?
Oh, you know...
Because you have thought about it, surely. I know you must have done.
Yeah, I've got a couple of the long-sleeve Hummel shirts, and I think, whilst the Chad is my favourite, the Hummel in the long sleeves really is stunning as well. So, yeah, probably one of them to get buried in, one of them for little Harry to hang on to. But, yeah, that'll be the one for that, I think.
I think you look personally best in that white. You've got a white version of the DHL shirt, which I probably, out of all of the ones I've seen, I'm probably most jealous of that, I think.
To be honest, I'm most jealous of that as well these days. The size of the paunch, it's very much a bit of a strain to even try and get that one on. So that's definitely hanging up. And I was lucky enough also to get hold of one of Hotter's shirts. And cripes, you see the size of those things, or lack of size of those things, compared to you, me and the average fan on the terrace. It's, you know, they are not kind to the
snug.
I remember you wrestling it off of him at the end of one of the games. I don't think he didn't look that enthusiastic about giving it to you.
I don't think he had a choice.
Nick, thank you very much for joining us. Nick Brews on there, kit collector. Thoroughly enjoyed that. We could probably do an entire show on kits because they just stir such emotion, don't they, kits? It's a real a memory of a certain time that, you know, that Chad kit for me is when I first started watching football, really, my first memories of football. So that's why it sticks out for me. The Hummel kit as well, Terry Evans and the likes and Jamie Bates in those kits, Marcus Gale. That's my first real proper memories of that level of football. But my only gripe with kits now, and we won't go too much into it, is just the fact they change every season. Yeah. I don't know. It's a pain, isn't it?
And there's three other things as well. You know, you've got a home and an away, and then you've obviously got like a special boxed edition of something that you're probably not designed to wear. It's there to collect. And, you know, although it was £65, I think it was, wasn't it?
It was £60.
£60 for the third kit. And it's got, you know, Farewell Griffin Park on it, and it's it does look great.
They'll be playing five aside and you get tugged back in that. That's going to end up in a punch up.
Yeah,
isn't it?
You don't want to get a snag on it, do you?
Yeah, exactly.
If you've got a cat or whatever,
I don't touch it. I think it's been many years since anybody's like tugged me back. Look, my speed is gone.
I wasn't aware, by the way, and I will quickly just finish on that the commemorative blue kit that you mentioned, because I love the fact they've not just worn it once. I think it's four or five times now that it's been worn. Yeah, all to success, is it? Is it how many
two
times?
Games, wasn't it?
Oh, is it two? So it was Luton? No, not Luton. The 3-2er.
Yeah.
Millwall. Was it Hull?
Luton, wasn't it? We were at Luton.
Was it? Right. So it's at least been worn to some success, but I didn't realise that it was a historical nonsense.
Yeah, no, it's not actually. We never played in blue and blue. If you look at, I mean, we talked about the colourisation project a couple of weeks back,
absolutely.
Didn't we? And if you look at a black and white version of the kit that we played in 1904-5, I'll show you the picture when we go off air, but you can't wait for that. And it looks like it's two tones of blue. So if you colorize that, not knowing the actual colors, then you probably would have come up with what Umbro have done. And not being funny, it doesn't look bad. It looks really good, but it looks like Chelsea or Leicester, as far as I'm concerned. You know, it's nice with blue and gold. It looks great. And as I said, on an athlete, it looks
all right on me.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Mate, yeah.
Rewriting history, Arbrev. You mentioned Leicester, by the way. They're currently leading Aston Villa in the Premier League. 1-0 goal from Harvey Barnes. A well-taken goal, too, taken on Pepe Reina, who had rushed out of his box. But it's Leicester 1, Aston Villa 0. Next up on the Brentford Fan Show, we're looking ahead to the big fixture with Fulham.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
It's a Brentford Fan Show here on Love Sport London. Me, Matt Beadle, Dave Laney Lane and Gary GP Paul from B Sotted. Just a quick reminder that from the 31st of March, Love Sport's national station will be the only way of listening to Love Sport on DAB radio across the UK. If you're listening to us on Love Sport London, you need to retune your radio. Retuning is an easy process. Just press the auto tune refresh or auto scan button on your digital radio, or go into the menu and press auto tune to make sure you do not miss your favourite shows right here on Love Sport. This is the Brentford Fan Show, and right now we are going to switch over to Jim Levack, who's going to talk us through the upcoming fixtures, the first of which, of course, this Friday at Craven Cottage is against Fulham. A big promotion battle, that one. Jim, I understand we've caught you mid-ping pong.
You have. In fact, the game just now was a bit of a rush against the clock, really, but I managed to put it away in the end, despite losing the first one. So, we're on a bit of a roll now.
Okay, nice one. So you did win. So you're
yeah,
positive.
Yeah, I did win in the end, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good stuff. We can start on a positive footing
then. Thank God for that.
Yeah.
We had to throw it just to make the phone call. So getting back to actual football, we obviously Fulham this Friday night. It's an absolute cracker. It's got all the makings of a cracker. But I want to really look at the next three fixtures as a packet, really. I mean, we've got Fulham Friday, then we've got West Brom at home, which could be the last game at Griffin Park under the floodlights, and then we've got Reading Saturday week. So those three games are kind of going to play a bit of major part in, you know, how the season's going to end for us, aren't they, Jim?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a sort of deciding sort of period in the season for us. I think, you know, anything sort of around the 7-point mark, you know, be quite happy with that, to be honest. It's going to be tough, though. But, you know, if we want to get in the playoffs, then we've got to really be getting results against teams like that. You know, Fulham, I'm not sure that, you know, they're really as good as their position suggests. I'll get a bit of stick for that, but I don't think they are. I think they're very much reliant on Mitrovic, who's quality. West Brom, having a bit of a sticky patch, so there's no reason we can't turn them over, and especially after the way we played up there. Obviously, know a lot of West Brom fans living in the Midlands, and they said we were the best side they've seen this season. And then Reading's a bit of the banana skin; they're up and down, a bit inconsistent on their day. They can beat anyone, but you know, on our day we can beat anyone. So, you know, yeah, 7 points up for grabs and consolidate that playoff place, and then anything else is a bonus if the others slip up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing I kind of noticed looking at these three fixtures. You know, we say it's, you know, you say 7 points, it could quite easily be zero, because one of I think someone was mentioned on Quest the other night how this league, there are a lot of, I know some people said it was an easier league. I don't think it is. I think there's a lot of teams around the same level. And I don't think that Reading are hugely behind the rest of the league.
I know, I don't think they are. But, you know, as we all know, on our day, we can beat anyone. So, you know, that's what I look at. And if we don't beat them and, you know, doomsday scenario, we get no points, then, you know, it's a case of coming through that spell and going, and I hate the phrase, but, you know, going again and just trying to get in the playoffs and get a bit of momentum. Any side now that builds a bit of momentum in these last nine games is you know, got a chance of getting in the playoffs, even from sort of probably 10th place, 11th place. So, you know, you can't rule even Millwall out because they've got nothing to lose.
Look, Jim, you know, being a realist, you know, that team that played last Saturday, the 5-0 Brentford team, they're not going to get 0 points from the next three games. So, you know, it's. I remember having these conversations earlier on in the season about, you know, how many points we expect to get in between international windows. And we did say, you know, just when we're coming out of a stinky patch, it might be, you know, it might be four, might be seven. We almost got full house. Anywhere near that, we've got to be so confident. The players are going to be confident and buzzing from Saturday. And you know, let's be honest, Fulham are going to be quaking. They think that we've got the, you know, the hoodoo sign over them. They all know what could happen to them if they kind of aren't out on their A game themselves. It's got all the potential to be an absolute humdinger, hasn't it?
Absolutely, quite agree. And you know, as you say, rightly say, that, you know, there's more fear for them than there is for us. I mean, they're third, they're ahead of us. They've got more to lose, but I do think, you know, that if as I said before, if we play the way we can away from home, as we have done, and personally I wouldn't drop Pontus in there for that game, you know, I don't see any reason why we can't come away with a kind of result that even if it's a point, you know, it keeps it open.
Yeah, and I think there's a few more tickets were released today. It's going to be obviously a sold-out Brentford section. It's not going to be the 7,000 that we took there the first time we went because we haven't been given 7,000 tickets. But, you know, live on TV, under the floodlights, straight after work for a lot of people at the beginning of a weekend, it's going to be buzzing in there. And as you rightly say, you know, our record at Craven Cottage since we got promoted and the, you know, these games started to become a regular on the fixture list again, we've done all right there. So I can smell the nerves from further up the river already. We're going to talk about this with the Fulhamish lads on the Wednesday podcast that will come out live on Thursday morning. We'll have a bigger build up to the game then. But you know, it's a game that I literally can't wait to go in and watch.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the same I think for Brentford supporter, you know, and they, you know, we will make a noise at Craven Cottage, drown out the clappers, obviously. but you know, it is just 3 points. It's important to remember that at this stage of the season. If we win it, then, you know, we go on to West Brom. We take the momentum from the Fulham. And, you know, momentum is everything at this stage of the season. It's not who's playing the best, even, I don't think. It's just getting results, getting momentum and you know, sometimes grinding results out. I mean, you know, Saturday will be a good confidence booster for Brentford. And, you know, the most important thing, I think, from that game, I'd agree with Thomas Frank, was the defensive sort of mindset. There was a determination not to concede, and that's really important, you know, as you get into the business end of the season. But I think, you know, we've got what's his name, Colin on the telly said the other day, you know, that we are a scary side to play against with those front three. Colin Warnock.
Colin Murray and Neil Warnock. He was a hybrid of the two, Jim, but I like that. You've been confused by your paddle, mate. I'll let
I
you get that.
You meant Colin.
I did mean Colin.
Yeah. I'll miss that one.
Lovely stuff. Thank you, Joe Levat there. We'll let him get back to Jim. His ping pong. Lovely stuff there, gents. And Gary, listen, it is unbeaten at Craven Cottage since April 1990. Like I said, I think it's just one defeat since January 1954. It'll be the 26th visit to Craven Cottage. The first one was all the way back in 1928.
Listen, unfortunately, all good runs have to come to an end sometime. Just ain't going to be Friday.
Love it.
Bring it on. Bees will win.
Bees will win. Back on the winning trail to close that gap as well. A win will take Brentford to within 1 point of those Cottagers. We'll bring you all the reaction from that one next week on the Brentford Fan Show here on Love Sport, 8 p.m. We'll see you next time.
Come on.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.